Just to let you know, this podcast may contain some offensive / explicit language.
So what do people do if they don't like that, Alf?
If you don't like that type of stuff, then you simply don't have to listen. But we've given you your warning. Hope you enjoy.
Oh, that's a belter, mate, that is.
I've got trackies on.
Yeah.
No boxers, though.
So he stitched us right up.
Absolutely mental.
Tommy can boat better than he can walk.
I'll jump over the side of the boat. I'll fight him.
Does this make us weirdos?
He's having his photo taken in a sea of condoms.
And how big was it?
£9.
He's got a gun straight in his head, mate, like on his forehead.
What rig do I use for this placement?
Nice impression.
You're listening to Nash Tackle Off the Hook.
Nash Tackle Off the Hook.
You're listening to Nash Tackle Off the
Nash
Hook.
Nash Tackle Off the Hook.
You're listening to Nash Tackle Off the Hook.
You are listening to Nash Tackle Off the Hook.
Hello and welcome to the Nash Tackle Off the Hook podcast. Today's guest, London's finest, none other than big carp hunter, Alfie Russell himself. But before Alfie comes on, some Nash news. Today in the studio, joining me, Henry Lennon. Henry, mate, how are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Living the dream, mate. Sunshine.
Yeah, it's very nice. It is very nice.
What have you been up to lately? Much fishing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think last time I came on here, it was just going into spring. When last time I did Nash News, and I was saying, oh, I've just, like, I've got a few things working out, I've got a few things planned. I'm hoping it all comes together. And yeah, it has a little bit this spring. For once, the plans come together. It's slid off in the last couple of weeks due to situations out of my control, which basically I've been told to not fish this lake anymore. But
went poaching, caught fish, got caught.
Yeah, but up until that point, yeah, it was going really well, and yeah, caught quite a few nice ones. So I'm happy. Yeah, yeah.
Good angling, mate.
Cheers.
We don't condone poaching at Nash Tackle. in terms of what we're going to talk about, June the 16th is imminent. We're in a couple of weeks away at most.
Not even, is it? It's, I think when this goes out, it'll be like 2-3 days. At the moment, we're like 3 or 5, 6 days, something like that. Yeah.
Just all concept of time, mate. Yeah. River fishing for you, talk to me.
Well, I'm very new to it in the sense that, well, obviously, because I've not lived in England until the last sort of 2-3 years. And yeah, well, we didn't have any river carp in Switzerland, not that I ever fished for anyway. So it was something that, sort of, when would it have been? Yeah, 2 years ago I did my first sort of sessions on the River Lee. Alan put me on a few spots and I just really love it. I think there's a lot of freedom to it. I always thought that the rivers over here were all sort of like, there was a few carp around but not too many, and they've all been ottered and they've all been, like, the cormorants have eaten all the little fish. They're just pretty desolate of fish. But no, I've found quite a few different stretches that have got, not the biggest carp in the world, but I've got a decent stock of carp. They've got a decent stock of other fish, and I really enjoy it. I love it. I think it's so different to fishing on lakes and, like, proper fisheries, I'll say, whereas you can just sort of, like, roam around, do what you want. One of my favorite things is just find a little stretch, like quite narrow one, and just wading up it and sight fishing for fish. I absolutely,
yeah,
I love that. I think it's the best. But then also I do like a little bit of a baiting campaign. I tried one last year, didn't go too well. I've got another one sort of going this year for near work, and I think it's really fun. I think it's great. I think people, it surprised me how few people have tried it. I know people get stuck into lakes that they're fishing and they're focusing all the time on it. It's a good time of year as well, isn't it? Normally that post-spawning period. So so I can see why they don't, but it still surprises me that, I mean, I think Wilson's never caught a river carp and things like that. I just think I'm surprised you don't have a go for it, but yeah, if you've never had that drive to or want to do it. But I love it. I think it's really different. Yeah,
I think sometimes you can psych yourself out. As you said there, you thought they're barren and there might just be the odd fish here. But really, some of the stretches, if you look around and put some effort in, they can be quite prolific. And you're not always fishing for, well, you're not fishing for known fish. You don't know what's
going to
happen.
That's what I like about it as well. Yeah, you just don't know what's going to pop up next. I mean, normally it's a £10 common, but every now and then you do get like a nice mid-20s. Well, I don't. I've never had that, but you could get a mid-20 scaly.
You're selling this.
Yeah, but, no, but yeah, it's fun.
It could happen. And also you're able to sort, with the banks being so busy, you're able to, I mean, some rivers are busy, but generally you're able to sort of find a little bit of your own angling bait and angle for them.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of freedom to it. That's what I really like about it. And it is just, it's very different to the stereotypical UK style of fishing, which is, yeah, it's like a nice sort of release from it, I think. And you can, I know on some waters, like some rivers like the Thames and the Trent, you do need to put a bit more time in, but there's a lot of rivers out there where you can just go, oh, I want to go fishing for the day. I'm going to go on whatever the Lee or the Chelmer or whatever. And you've got a good chance of sort of catching a couple and just staying mobile. And yeah, it's just freedom. That's what I like about it. And that's what I like about fishing, a lot of freedom and
yeah,
adventure. And I think the rivers offer that.
Yeah, definitely. And also there's always the bonus of maybe a cheeky other species, like some big barbel knocking around.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like a boily, don't they, mate? I've been...
I've caught a few off floating bread as well, barbel. Yeah, that was a big surprise. I think one of my first ever barbel I caught on floating bread, we're fishing for carp, that was really weird. I remember them coming up and I had a few carp taken, and all of a sudden one took my piece of bread and I struck into it, and when it came, it was like the Loch Ness Monster. It sort of like came and like this big serpent, and I thought that was a bit of a weird one, like I wonder what that was. And it's proper fighting, so you don't think it's a carp, and all of a sudden this like 8-pound barbel just comes swimming past. I thought, didn't think they ate anything off the surface.
I've never had one off the top,
I've had quite a few now. I think it's the River Lee's quite renowned for it. There's a few stretches that they just love eating off the surface. I don't know if anyone else has ever. I know when I put it on one of my Instagram stories that I caught one off the surface, a few people messaged me going, oh yeah, you must have been fishing this stretch because they do like it there. And I don't know if there's any other like common occurrences of that happening, but
good angling.
Complete fluke. Like I thought I was fishing with carp basically, and yeah, barbel came up.
If somebody wanted to target the rivers, what would your advice be, tackle wise, bait wise, approach wise?
I think depends. I think if you're going to do it as like a campaign, then just pre-bait. Every single time I have a successful campaign, it's just down to pre-bait. It's as simple as that. And the thing with it's, I know you can't do it a lot of the times. I mean, if you're on a busy club or a busy syndicate, a day ticket, pre-baiting's just not really an option a lot of the time. Whereas on a river, you can get away with it a lot more because, like you said earlier, the banks are a lot quieter. So you can really get away with putting bait in and knowing no one's going to sort of sheep you up or anything, and or not even sheep you up, just fish it not knowing and ruin it for you. So I think if you really want to go for it, then yeah, pre-bait. That's what I'm doing with a spot near work. And that one's a bit more of a campaign. And then the other one would just be just stay mobile. Like they just move around so much. I think because they're always fighting against the flow, they're expending so much energy. So they're always looking out for food. And once they exhaust sort of one larder of natural food, they're moving on to the next one, so they're constantly on the move. So you have to be as well. And sometimes it's quite easy to do that on rivers. Sometimes it can be a little bit tricky, especially if you're sort of moving from one stretch controlled by one club to a next club or something like that, or you're going through some private land. But if you can, just keep mobile and don't overcomplicate things either. That's the main thing, because again, banks aren't that busy, they're not that pressured. You can get away with just being pretty simple, straightforward. Be quite strong with your tackle, obviously, because they're hard fighting fish. They may not be the biggest in the world, but yeah, they put up a good scrap, and just enjoy it. It's fun. I really love it. I love river fishing.
Give it a go, definitely. Tricky one for you, mate. What are your thoughts on river close season? Obviously, that period of time, do you think it should remain close season? Do you think they should be open all year round?
I get why they have it. I think it's nice because from that traditional sense, you still got the June the 16th and the glorious June the 16th. It's always a massive anticlimax. You're waiting for this magical day and you end up just blanking. So I think it's nice in that sense. Do we need it? Probably not. Like, it's so hard though, isn't it? Because if you do want to give those fish a break for spawning, and they are going to spawn in that time, like unless something really drastically happens with like a proper cold winter. So I guess it guarantees that they have a break. I'm not such a river angler like constantly that I could guess like it bothers me so much that I'm not fishing those 3 months a year. But I mean, I know a lot of people who are almost out and out river anglers. They really don't like it, and I can get why, because sort of you've got that June to late summer period, and then as soon as the rain start coming, the river's basically unfishable. So really you've got like 3 months where you can actually fish the river a lot of the time over the summer, and then it's not even fishable because of the conditions, and then it's not even fishable because of because you've got the close season. So I get why a lot of people find it annoying. I don't have enough of an opinion on it, I don't think, to be honest. Like, I see the arguments for either side. I quite like it just because it's, you still got that traditional aspect and you feel like you're one of the carp fishermen of old or whatever when you're
preparing
for June 16th.
I'm probably, I must be the tennis player in me. Like, the scoring system in tennis has always been the same way. That's always been the same.
I was thinking about that the other day.
Keep it.
That is bizarre.
Yeah,
that is mental, isn't it?
Easily,
I was thinking, like, I don't know why I was driving somewhere, and I think it came on a podcast I listened to, and I really think, imagine if you don't have a clue what tennis was, and you're watching that, and you go, right, 15 points, I don't know why I got 15, and hang on, he's got 5 for that one, he's got 10 now, it's a draw, like, it makes like no it, sense, does it?
I like it, like, I like that, the same
makes
aspects.
No in terms sense.
Of lead the close season, mate, I quite enjoy it, but then as you say, there's more anglers, there's people that want to... I completely see that side of stuff. But for me, I quite like the sort of traditional hark back of having that period of
time. Yeah, it just makes it so much more traditional and keeps that tradition of the river. And I think that's a nice thing. Like, we're losing a lot of that tradition. I mean, I don't even know about a lot of it because I didn't grow up with it. But, speaking to a lot of the boys in the office and speaking to someone like Curly especially, who goes on about the good old days and
Carpy Curly,
and you do think sometimes like that nostalgia is quite nice, and the June 16th sort of holds on to that, so
too right,
keep it, you're allowed to keep it, EA, if you're watching this. For message from Henry Lennon, you can keep the close season.
You've got
Henry
pull.
Endorses
you've
it
you've got big pull up there, mate, with all your poaching activities. Henry, you've been a ledge, mate. Good luck on the hopeful continuation of your campaigns. I look forward to hearing about it. And I'm going to go and dig out Alfie, wherever he is. He's probably having a brew out the back.
Nice. See you in a bit. Cheers. In a bit.
Alfie Russell, welcome to the podcast, mate. Thank you so much for coming in. How are you?
Not bad. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, mate. Really good. I'm looking forward to chatting through all things London, Carpi, Urban, and you, mate, really. Much fishing recently, or have you been doing something else?
Yeah, recently, to be fair, I have been doing quite a bit of fishing. Well, as the weather is, they're spawning everywhere now, aren't they? Like, it is unbearably hot, although it's only about 27 degrees, isn't it, out there, but pretty hot for the UK, I suppose. And apparently we've got like 100 days of this coming, so...
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Seeing as we can't go on holiday.
Exactly, mate. That's enough to make up for it. There's loads to talk about with yourself. Obviously, chapters around you being here at Nash, chapters around some of the campaigns and fish you've caught. And we've sort of talked about a select few, which we're going to share. Now, I wanted to start off with you. You're pretty synonymous with London.
Yeah.
Still there now. You still live there. How did angling and the whole sort of London angling scene develop from you? Was it the classic sort of tale of your parents being involved or someone significant in your family being involved, or was it just something you loved from an early age?
Yeah, sort of a bit of both, I suppose. My dad and my uncle, they obviously have carp fished and fished their whole life since they were kids, and they took me when I was a little one. And being in London, sort of that was the only place we could go when we was local. But to be fair, I got into fishing more on like family holidays and stuff when we'd go out, and I'd get dragged down the lake on like little summer holidays with my dad and my uncle. But when we did obviously get back home to London, we did go to places like Walthamstow and stuff like that. And as I got older and got more into it, sort of the age of 5 and 6, I'd then asked to go with them. I'd usually get dragged with them, and I'd be a pain, like, considering I'd just be young, getting up to no good and just getting in the way. But as I sort of started getting into it and enjoyed it, I'd ask more to go with them. And so living in London, that's when it sort of all became second nature, that like the urban scene, I didn't choose to do that. That just come naturally, you know. If I wanted to go fishing, I'd be going down the local park lake or going down the canal or the river down the road. But it just happened to be that I lived in London, so that's where I ended up fishing, do you know what I mean?
What was it, do you think, about fishing that resonates with you, even still to this day? What is it?
I've always liked nature and the outdoors and stuff like that. And when I was a kid, young on holidays, I'll go out catching frogs and all newts and all wildlife and stuff. I just like being in the wild, as you could say. It's sort of being in and around nature, especially when you're fishing.
Yeah.
It's just that connection with animals, really. A lot of my fishing is sight fishing and watching them and, like, catching them in the edge. And I'm just so fascinated by seeing something that's wild and then having it in my hands and then letting it go unharmed. You know what I mean? It's quite a mad one. That's sort of what connects me with fishing. But it's pretty rare, to be fair, to have someone like myself who lives in the middle of London enjoy something like that when you're not around it all the time.
That's what I was going to ask. The contrast is the middle of London, like the hustle bustle, population density. How are you with that side of stuff then? Because somebody who's got that sort of nature, wanting to be out in the outdoors, is probably a massive sort of phobia to be then thrown into the middle of London. So how do you deal with that side of stuff? Do you still like that sort of city life as well?
I do and I don't, to be fair. Like, I would hate to go down the West End now, go shopping or something like that. I could never bear to do that. It's just beyond me, do you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, I'd just rather get out and go fishing. And fishing in London now, even though I drive, I've been driving years now, you just can't park nowhere either. So it's like you start to have a love-hate relationship with, like, growing up fishing, getting the bus and the train was a lot easier to what it is been for the last 4 or 5 years because of parking. Because once you pass your driving test, you're like, thank God I haven't got to get at the bus or the train anywhere. But I do sort of lean to fishing more the wild places now, you know.
For you, in those early years when you were fishing in and around London, led by your dad and your uncle, was there any sort of standout captures that led to you sort of taking more of a carp path? Because obviously the Thames, the Lee, they're full of all sorts of different species, but you seem to have made a niche in fishing for some of the sort of urban carp that populate the area.
Pardon? I think the urban carp thing, that all come around when I was catching carp at little commercial venues on them summer holidays and stuff like that out of London. And I'd walk around Walthamstow sometimes with my uncle or my dad. Like, there'd be night sessions on. We're going back years. And they wouldn't fish all the time, but we'd have little walk rounds. This was like when they was planning to fish Walthamstow. I was only like 5 or 6. I see like a couple of people catch like mid-20s when you're there walking around, and they just look huge on the bank compared to what I was used to catching. And then as I got to the age of sort of like 10, 12, I was allowed obviously out, like to play out by myself without any my parents or anything. So I'd go to the local park, walk around the lakes after school with my mates or on my own, speak to the anglers and just be a pain in the arse, asking them loads of questions. And in the close season mainly, that's when I sort of fell in love with it, because I'd see all these big carp spawning and swimming around in the crystal clear water. That was then. Obviously the water's changed a lot now, and just want to catch them. And sort of that's what gave me the little bit of a bug to catch these urban carp, if you like.
For you, fond memories in terms of those early years and urban carp, anything particularly stand out in your head?
Yeah, I had a good session with my dad on one of the local park lakes. This was one of the lakes actually on Hampstead. We didn't really know much what that was in there. A beautiful little picturesque lake up there. And there was a couple big mirrors and really, I don't know the strain to be fair, but mega old strain carp. And you'd have people that would be bivvied up for like a week before the open season and just... yeah, just literally camping out. And it'd be rammed. You wouldn't get on there for the first week because people would literally do a whole week session. This lake only had like 3-4 swims. And we went on holiday and then we fished it. When we come back, obviously everyone had left. And the carp probably thought, well, everyone's gone home now, we can feed. And we had a mega session. I think I had the two big ones. My dad had a couple. I ended up with five and had a big tench, and it was like unheard of.
How old are you at this point?
I was 12 then. Wow. But I had my own set of carp rods, like my first set of carp rods and reels. And I was only really yet just night fishing, like with my dad. And
how big were the biggins? You said you had both the biggins. How big were they?
I think 34 and 31.
But 12?
Yeah, 12.
My 12 years old. I think I was a lot older before I had my first 30. That's an incredible bit of angling.
But I suppose that's, we're going back now, like 11 years, 12 years. So that was still a big fish then.
Totally, yeah.
But for a park lake, I suppose there were still bigger carp out there, but it is still, at that age, yeah, it is a giant fish. But then a week later, I fished one of the other ponds and had the big one out of there, 31. And then I went to Wolverhampton the next weekend and had another big one, the big mirror out of the stone, that's like upper 30s.
On a roll, boy.
Yeah, I was on a roll, literally. I was on fire, and I was only like 12 years old at the time, or just turned 13 within them few weeks, because it was like the summertime, my birthday probably passed. And yeah, I was putting photos into Angler's Mail.
Do you think that solidified your sort of big carp buzz and sort of passion for them?
Because at that age, I was, like I said, I was walking around the park lakes and I was watching the carp spawn, falling in love with it. I was reading like Terry Earn's books at the time in school. It was probably the only books I ever bloody read. But yeah, the love for it was sort of forming, and it became, like you say, it solidified a lot for carp fishing and the love for it around that sort of time. I was catching these beautiful old carp, and I was looking at, like, through Tell's books and stuff, and his early years on like the car park and the Pads Lake and all, and the Match Lake and all stuff like that. And these carp were so very similar, like little heart tails and old, like, Italian leathery things. And I really wanted to catch carp like that.
Yeah.
Looking at the book, and there was the carp I was catching, and I could deter whether or not and what I would like to fish for from that young age. Like, I would like to catch these nice, dark, old fish. Reading the book, do you know what I mean? And that's sort of today what I go on to target. Like, I went fishing actually the other week with my mates and had like four or five. They're like, you're not going to have a photo of that? I'm like, nah. I think I took a photo of like the smallest one, but it was the one with the nicest mouth and the darkest, like,
yeah.
Through all the other like ones so back.
It's not just about size then for
it's
you.
Not it's not about size at all. No.
It's about sort of the significance, the strain. And the overall look of the fish.
Yeah, the strain, them old carp that haven't got much history. The overall look, like you say, and ones that haven't really been caught day in, day out. They're the special ones, the ones you don't see all the time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, them ones you'd never know. I've caught some carp from some mental places you'd never think, like, they were in there.
Yeah. In terms of, you sort of said there you were submitting carp into Angler's Mail, Carp Talk, various other publications. How did it go from you fishing 12 years of age to you then being involved with Nash? Because that's pretty much the first time that a lot of people saw you. I know you filmed Eurobanks 9 with Al. That was later, but I remember first seeing you when you must have been very young, and you did a bit on one of the Nash DVDs.
Was it Urban Banks, not Eurobanks?
Sorry,
was,
yeah, Urban Banks, yeah. My bad.
So that sort of stemmed from, like I say, I was that young age, I was catching these carp and I was putting them into Angler's Mail and on Facebook.
Right.
And I had a message. Someone messaged me. Might have been a fella Winston who worked here years ago.
Yeah.
Who worked with Ollie, the camera guys.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was him asking if I'd be interested in doing a bit of filming. And at the time, I think I then come to one of the shows and got chatting to Alan. And, yeah, we arranged to obviously do a series because he was doing his Urban Bank series, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And we'd done a little bit in one of the DVDs on the Hampstead Park Lakes.
That's right, yeah.
And I was about 14 years old then. Alan caught a lovely mirror. I had a little koi and a lovely mirror off the surface. And yeah, that's how it all stemmed. They got in contact with me. And I actually won the Fox Cup as well from the Angler's Mail at the time for catching big tench, big barbel, chub, carp. I think it was like £3,000 and obviously your name on the cup and stuff like that. And yeah, it sort of all happened at once. I couldn't believe it. I didn't ever search for it. It sort of just happened.
It came to you. How did you feel about that then at 14, going out and doing some filming with what is a big company?
Yeah, it was surreal, to be fair. Social media back then, like you say, that was like one of the first ever DVDs. Mm. So you say like social media has been around for donkeys, but that was still very new then.
Yeah.
Sort of 11 years ago, 10 years ago. It's not like what it is now.
Definitely not, mate. It was very different back then. Did you take to that sort of without any trepidation, or did you feel a bit nervous about being on film? You're young, aren't you? 14.
Yeah, I was nervous, but obviously the guys were all supportive at that time and they gave me the confidence and it sort of did come naturally. I still have blips now, in front of the camera. Everyone does. But yeah, I sort of... It was a big thing, but I managed it, obviously.
Yeah, no, you were really good, mate. Did you think at that time, obviously with school and whatever else, did you ever think that your angling would become a career, or did you have another plan with regards to what you wanted to do?
At that age, I'd sort of stopped playing football. Because I was playing football semi-professionally.
Right.
And we actually had a fishing accident, me, my uncle and my dad, when we was fishing over Walthamstow. And the bivvy caught a light, the stove went up, and my uncle got severely burnt.
No.
Yeah, like his face, he got rushed to Colchester, to an emergency burns unit. I'm sure it was Colchester or Chelmsford. Very lucky.
Were you all in the same bivvy?
It was all in the same bivvy. So I was sitting on my dad's bed. My uncle's bed was there, like a Nashy double top. They're quite big, aren't they? So you could get two beds in them. And we was cooking, and then the stove just went up, and you had like an inside skin in this, and it literally just like everything, it just, the gas was leaking. I said I could smell gas, and it was like, you can't, shut up, like, because I was young then. Mm. I think I was only about, like 10, 11. And that caught a light, and I was falling more in love with fishing at the time, but with everything that happened, it was such a traumatic thing. I just stopped. So I didn't go to training, and then I just ended up stopped playing. I was playing for Tottenham at the time, although I don't like saying that because I'm a out and out gooner, but yeah.
Never mind, mate.
Yeah. That's what happened. And then
so you just left it?
Yeah, I just left it. And then I started training with Arsenal after that. And sort of just fizzled out, mate. Like, I didn't end up getting in the team. Mm. And just started fishing. Like, and then that started happening. I didn't look towards a career in it, but kind of just fizzled out. Like, I'm small, ain't I? Like,
and mate, you're tall. We're both about, what are we, six foot?
Well, I'm like 5'5", so I'm a small little guy. Like, and there was people coming in the squad that were like giant and rapid. And strong, like twice the height of me at my age, and I just weren't getting a look in. Like, so yeah, that sort of fizzled out, and the angling sort of took a bit more of a forward to my enjoyment. That was what I ended up having the love for.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, more than football. It wasn't like I was going to be a footballer, or I was going to be, it was like I kind of was good at football and loved it, and I just kind of ended up swerving and.
Yeah.
Like when you're a kid, you're in the skate park one year and then you're doing something else the next. You just find a love for something else, didn't you? Like, that's kind of what happened.
You're 14. No one knows really what they want to do at 14, do they? No. But yeah, if that's your enjoyment and passion, I get it. How is your uncle? Okay?
He's okay. He actually looks really well to this day. You would never know. But if he showed you some of the photos, you'd be like, Jesus, is that even you? Like,
that is a pretty scary accident.
Yeah. Man. All his hands were all, like, I will say this on camera, it was horrible. I see him dip his hands in the lake, right, and pull them out, and all his hands are dripping like PVA, like PVA glue. If you put your, and that was all his skin, like melting off his hands and that.
Oh, wow,
horrible, mate.
Yeah, not a nice thing to witness at any age,
especially when fishing. Yeah,
yeah, not the one. So you talked about their being contacted by Nash, going to film. You talked about the Hampstead Park Lakes thing. You talked about the Urban Banks episode. You filming that? How was your first impressions of Mr. Blair, mate?
What, the first time I filmed when I was young?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all good. He was a wicked guy. Obviously, I'd watched a few first Urban Bankses. Mm. At that time, he'd done like a one on a canal, one of the first ones years ago, up in Milton Keynes somewhere, I think it was, yeah, up that right. way. Yeah, so obviously I'd seen the videos and I looked forward to meeting him. And then I had to actually get out fishing with him and realise that these guys that you see on the YouTube and on the internet are actually just normal guys. Like, it was quite, yeah, it was quite cool. I had a wicked first impression.
Yeah.
To be fair.
And that episode obviously went real well. You caught a few, didn't you? The first on the DVD in the Hampstead Park, like, you caught a couple, didn't you?
Yeah, caught a couple. Lost a few as well. The weed was a nightmare. But yeah, caught a lovely old mirror. Alan caught a lovely old mirror carp. So yeah, it went well.
And then on to the Urban Banks episode. For you, in terms of that whole filming piece, obviously that's like a bigger scale project, if you like. How was that experience? Talk me through it.
So obviously that was a jump. So I was about 18 then, maybe 17 when that was filmed. I'd done a few, I'd been in the DVD two or three times in a row before then. I'd done a nice piece on the Copper Mill when I filmed with Ollie, and obviously I had some GoPros. And yeah, then jumped to that. But that was a big step because social media boomed in that period. So you was hitting big numbers, do you know what I mean? These videos were getting 200, 300, 500K views, do you know what I mean? So I knew it was going to be popular. And we had plans. It was almost the impossible because Mr. Blair was planning it. And we had all these venues to go and these people to meet in such a short period of time. I think we only had two or three nights. Yeah. And it went really well, that Urban Banks, to be fair. We had a great time. We caught some lovely carp. From where did we fish again? We fished the docks, Shadwell Basin, Burgess Park. The tidal stretch of the Thames, like the Lee, the Thames. Alan caught some nice carp from the tidal river, from the dock. I didn't actually catch from either. But then we had a wicked session on Burgess at the end when we caught some lovely carp. So, yeah, it was good times, good weather. And, yeah, I was a lot more confident in front of the camera then. And, life was good.
Yeah. So, obviously, after that point, you've then come to a point in your life whereby you've moved on.
Yeah.
Is it a good point moving on in terms of the right move at the right time and the reasons behind it?
Yeah, I guess there's always a reason behind it. Yeah. And sometimes you do always move forward in life for sometimes the good, for sometimes the bad. I am in a good place at the minute.
Mm.
Whether I'd be in a better place if things were different, I wouldn't. You're never going to know, are you? Sometimes that's just what happens in life. You can't dwell on it. But I certainly wouldn't have the opportunity or be where I am today if it wasn't for, obviously, the platform that I had being at Nash from a young age. And being here, do you know what I mean, today. It's nice seeing old faces and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it is good. I am in a good place now.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy. I'm really enjoying my fishing, so...
Yeah, good. We're going to talk more about what's active at the moment and things that have happened subsequently, but I'm going to delve back a little bit further at one of your campaigns, two awesome captures. I'm going to call it The Park, mate. Talk me through your time on The Park.
The Park. Well, it's... Yeah, it was a crazy one because a lot of the places I was fishing were park lakes at the time. Mm. And I had a couple of lakes I was fishing then. And I had a fellow who I met at Hampstead, and he was older. He was probably about, I don't know, 40s, 45. I was only young when I was about 16, 15. No, I was even younger than that, 14 maybe. Yeah, and he was saying, oh, come and check like this lake out. There's like some massive carp in there. I want you to like come and fish it. And anyway, I didn't for like a year. And every time I kept seeing him over Hampstead, he kept nagging me. So one day I was like, all right, I'll come like and have a look. And had a look and didn't really see much. And then he's like, I'm telling you, they are in it. And then went back again. And then all of a sudden, like really opened my eyes to see what was in there. Like a giant common and like big carp, loads of carp, do you know what I mean? And it was like the first sort of experience of untouched urban fishing, if you like, way before the social media boom. And you'd never see anglers there, do you know what I mean? Now you go to any park lake in London, there's someone walking around with a pair of Polaroids. Like, it's just, that never used to happen.
Yeah, it's been publicised a lot, hasn't it?
Publicised a lot. Not only that lake's been publicised a lot, but the urban sort of scene, like, has been publicised loads. To then now, the messages I get, mate, like people wanting to come into London to fish is crazy. But that, like I say, was the first taste of sort of that campaign of wild urban fishing, as you like. So I started off sort of pre-baiting where we see these carp, we can sort of get tucked away and get a couple of rods out and sit back for the nights. And first session, like carp that hadn't been caught, pretty shallow, simple fishing to what I was used to. Fishing choddies, they was very popular back then around 10 years ago. You go to a lake, everyone's using a chod. But it was perfect for the situation. Like I couldn't get a drop because it was shallow, silkweed and stuff like that. I just knew I was presented. So I was fishing choddies at the time, couple of rods, and just fishing them over pre-baited areas.
What sort of pre-bait were you putting in? Just boilie or?
Boilies and corn.
Right.
Boilies and corn, because getting the bus and the train back then, it was easy to take a couple of kilos of boilies and a couple of kilos of sweet corn and a catapult. And it was all close work. Pardon me. So I was throwing the boilies out by hand and the corn, I think I was just catapulting. And yeah, to carry big buckets of particle on the bus. Probably would have been ideal, like, because I wouldn't have had to go and bait up three times a week. I would have been able to just do like, really, I should have just done once a week, like.
But you took small quantities and went more regularly, yeah?
Yeah, took small quantities, went more regularly. I wasn't at school at the time. I think I was at college, so I wasn't really doing too much and just enjoying my fishing so I could get out and get involved with it a lot more. I used to do, like, scalded pellet balls, put them in the freezer, freeze them, and then, like, stack them in the freezer neatly, in a bucket or a bag, and then get them out and put them in a bag in a rucksack and just take like 5 kilos of them and throw them out. And you could get them 30, 40 yards by throwing them like a tennis ball.
Yeah.
That was a good method. I should still use that, to be fair. That worked really well pre-baiting. But yeah, that kind of pre-baiting approach I'd use and fish over them. Usually, like I say, I'll just fish single chods, like a handful of boilies. Usually I wouldn't put any bait out straight away. I'll just stick to singles like on the spot. First session, I remember having an absolute mental bite, like first bite, and had a £30 12 common.
That was your first bite?
That was my first bite, yeah. And had like a £20. My mate had a couple doubles and I had a double. And yeah, that was sort of that £30 was a good fish, to be fair, for there.
Yeah.
But a mega immaculate common. I've got a photo somewhere.
What was the scrap like there? Did you notice?
Yeah, they was jumping out and everything.
Because they've never been hooked, have they?
Never been hooked in about 3.5 foot of water. They was jumping clean out the water. Like on the way I'd set my chod arrangement up as well, it'd be like a lead. So I'd slide. Obviously, you'd have like your lead, and then like your little sleeve, and then a bead, your choddy, and then another bead, wouldn't you? But I'd tie like a couple of overhand knots below the the hook link.
Right.
So, like, the choddy would sort of, when you'd hook them, the bead would buff up to the knot, and then the lead would swing 14, 16 inches below.
It's not sliding right down to the lead.
It's not sliding down to the lead because I was losing a lot.
Yeah.
So they'd shake their head, right? And it's just like they're shaking. It's like you're playing them on a float.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The weight of the lead ain't there. They can't get rid of the hook.
Yeah.
So they would come up in the water a lot when you'd play them like that because they couldn't feel the lead. Do you know what I mean? The lead wasn't keeping them on the bottom. No good if you've got like weed and stuff like that because the lead can drag in it. It's not dangerous for the fish because if you break off, the choddy slides up the line the other way.
Yeah, the other way.
Exactly. But obviously it can, like, if they get in a weed bed, it's like you're bringing in a ton of weed at the time. But it was perfect for that situation. And yeah, they was jumping out, going mad, tearing around. And yeah, good times. But we had quite a lot of sessions like that with small commons.
Really? So there was a good head of fishing at the time?
There was a good head of fishing there, yeah. Not many mirrors. Saw a big mirror.
Mm.
Two big mirrors, a little mirror, and then, yeah, a couple of big commons. But that was a regular occurrence down there, and I wasn't getting bored. I was loving it.
Yeah.
But luckily, I did catch one of the big ones pretty quick.
Talk to me about that capture then.
So I went to Egypt on a family holiday and hadn't baited for a week. So then I come back and put a kilo of bait in. And then I was fishing the next night.
What bait? Yeah, what bait were you on at the time? Can you remember?
I think it was Scopex squid. No, monster squid, wasn't it, back then?
Monster pursuit?
Monster squid. Like a red monster squid, yeah. Okay. Like a, yeah, that was, yeah, because we're going back probably 2013, 2012. So, yeah, around that time. So, yeah, I put a kilo in, come back the next night. I was sitting there with my mate and we're sitting under these massive, what was the plant? Gonorrhoea, is it? Gonorrhoea? Like these, I think it's gonorrhoea, isn't it?
I'm terrible with plants, mate. I'm not even going to try and guess.
Like these massive leaves, mate, grows by water and that. Big purple stems and like a big rhubarb leaf, I think.
Right.
It's mad, mate. I'm like, we're literally sitting under it. He was sitting there. We're just having like a can of beer, just chilling, chatting, like, and it was fucking raining, mate. And we're just sitting under this massive leaf and weren't getting wet. And we was just like, this is the bollocks. And then the rain sort of left and we hadn't had a bite, like 2 hours it had been. We thought, this is a bit weird. And it was like a massive full moon, mate, that night. And then all of a sudden, the rod just pulled up tight. I remember running down to the rod, lifting into it, I could see my line cutting through the water. The moon was that bright, mate. Mm. And just see this bow wave that just zoomed straight across this bay. And I literally I could see the bow wave take off in the moonlight. And then it seemed like it was so delayed, about 5 seconds later, I was just flat rodded and had a proper decent battle, like, with this common. Fucking stripped me. Up and down the margin, it was plodding for ages. It weren't jumping out. I knew it was a good one. Like, the little ones were jumping out, smashing all over the shop, but it was just itchy plodding, and it was only shallow, like proper tearing the bottom up, because see big trails of fizzing and that in the moonlight, where it was just probably trying to shake the hook out. Anyway, so he's gone to net it, and we didn't have head torches at that time.
No.
And his gills, like his gill plate got caught on the net cord. And he was like, Jesus, it's massive. And it bolted. And like, you could just hear it, you know, like, pfft, like I could literally hear the size of it. And yeah, bolted out. And then it sort of turned and come back up. And he jumped in to net it this time, because he knew like how big it was. He had obviously seen the head on it in the moonlight. I had, and I was behind him, like. And because it was a bit, there was reeds there as well. And so he's netted it and he's gone, blimey. I said, what is it? And he's gone, it's a sack of potatoes. And I could see him trying to lift it. And I didn't even say anything to him, but straight away he's gone, cool. And he's lifted it up and he's come crashing through the reeds and he's just put it on the mat and he's all out of breath. And I was like, Jesus Christ, look at the size of that. And he's like, that's a 40. I was like, mate, that's huge. I was like, I've never seen nothing like that.
No.
Like, it was just abnormal. And it was nailed, mate. I've still got the hook link to this day, the little choddy in my tackle box. And, yeah, stuck it in a sack, called my old man. He's a black cabbie. Luckily, he was working around, like, central London at the time. He's like, oh, I'll run home. I'll get the scales and the camera. And then he'll come. So, yeah, my old man done that. So it was nice for him to be there as well. We come and done the photos, me and old Brian the dustman. And, yeah, weighed it. And it was like £42, I think. Yeah, £42 at the time. I'm sure it was so long ago. It might have been 40. No, I think it was 42 or 43.
It's a 40, regardless.
Mate, it was huge, like, at the time.
And there was no record of that fish being caught before?
No. No record of that fish being caught before at the time.
And you're, like, 16, are you?
No, I was, like, 13, 14.
13, 14?
Yeah.
That's obscene.
Yeah.
That is obscene.
An unknown uncaught London 40 at that age. Like, it was unreal.
And did you have any idea that a fish of that scale was in there?
Yeah, well, I'd seen big fish, do you know what I mean? Like that size, Adam taking floaters, all that. Listen, they're not the hardest carp to catch when they're not fished for.
Mm.
But the lake was big as well, mate. Like it was 40-odd acres. Yeah. Like it's not small, do you know what I mean? And you can't fish a lot of it. So it obviously made everything a little bit more trickier than what it would be. But yeah, a carp of that sort of size and that caliber was mega. Alan called me in the morning. He was like, well done. And that loads of people were saying, well done. And to me, I was still blown away. Like me and my dad were still laughing about it. Do you know, we'd still laugh about it today if we remember, like sat down and talked about it, had a bit of a reminisce. Like. But yeah, it was mega. But there was one mirror that I was after as well. That was around the same size. And it got to the point where, at this time, there was someone who was, I don't know if he was working or involved in Nash at the time, Paul, what was his name? Paul something. And he told someone about the lake.
Right.
And I went down and this fella was fishing. Dan, he's actually a lovely fella, to be fair. And he was fishing there because matey had met him on the stow and told him about my fish and stuff. And I think he lived half local. Then he started going down there, giving it a go. And he was the only person who really started fishing it. But the same sort of saying, you know what I mean? Your loose lips sink ships. He wouldn't maybe have been there if I had not told people where I was fishing at the time. Like being young and sort of a bit eager, I was all excited in it, you know what I mean? But now I learned just keep yourself hush if you've got a good bit of fishing. But he was fishing there, not really that much. So that was the only really deterrent I had. But this mirror, I'd literally watch it feeding, mate. Literally feeding it on the spot, wait till it got a little bit dark. It'd be the only one there. Literally, I wouldn't see another carp. Yeah, lower the rigging, sit down, rod to go off. Have like an 8 pound common.
Ugh.
And I'm like, I've just been feeding it for the last 2 hours with nothing else around. Like, I literally, how has that happened? Like, that happened so many times, mate. So many times. I think it was 4 years from the first capture of that common. 4 years I was still on there fishing.
So you
the
caught that common in your first year?
Yeah.
And then another 3 years.
Another 3 years, yeah. I was fishing other places, but I was doing sort of springs and autumns on there, do you know what I mean? Mm. Big bait ups and moons and all that. And yeah, didn't end up catching it. Pardon me. So I thought, the only way I'm catching this is when I've got it feeding in the day and throwing bits of bread flake or sweet corn or crushed boilies at it and it's taking them on a drop.
Mm.
The sawn-offs have come out. And I was actually a proper sneaky little angler at the time. I was putting my rods in a guitar case, mate. Like,
in a guitar case?
Yeah, I had my net, my camera, my tackle box, and my two rods in a guitar case. and I'd literally have it on my back and just wait till it got like evening time to go into gaffs or whatever, do you know what I mean, to fish and that. Yeah. So no one would ever know.
No.
I'd just be dressed normal like this. Like that's why a lot of my old shots, you see, I've got normal clothes on and that.
Yeah.
Like a tracksuit or something, do you know what I mean? A hoodie and stuff like that. Like I rarely got fishing clothes on because I just like to blend in.
You just whip out a guitar and start busking.
Yeah, so that's what people are probably thinking. Yeah. Like, sitting next to the lake and that guitar case, they're not going to bat two eyelids, are they? Like,
no.
So anyway, I said to my cousin, we'll go down there in the day and we'll have them. Like, Johnny was so supportive, mate. Like, the amount of times he'd drive me around, like, catching all these carp and not ever fish himself, bless him. So yeah, one morning, we thought we'd go up there. Parked, cost about 30 quid to park for about 2 hours. But it was well worth it. We was watching them. All of a sudden, the big ones come in. Like I knew it, the lake enough by now, like the weather and the spring and that, they come into the bay, they come into the edge. So I knew like we'd go down there and they'd be there. So yeah, they'd come in and the worst thing we'd done, we threw a bit of pellet in and they just started clouding up the water to... So we had to sit there for like an hour waiting for it to sort of settle. It's still milling about and it was throwing little bits of bread in and it's taking it on the drop. And then the big one sort of started to bully everything out of the way because a little common, like you've got 40 pound fish, a little 5-10 pound common can easily shoot in front of a carp that size and nick a bit of bread out of his mouth. So, yeah, I remember getting on this wall with this sawn off that was snapped. Right, my mum had shut the tip of the rod in the balcony door at home, so she'd snapped about 10 inches off the top of it. It had three eyes, and it was about 5 pound test curve where it was so short and stiff.
Nice.
And yeah, I thought I'm using it regardless. So anyway, put a bit of bread flake on and jumped up on this concrete like damn wall, and literally the mirrors come in, so I flicked the bread and lured it, and it's clocked it and come swimming over slowly. I thought, what's it doing? Like, and the bread by now had gone on the bottom, but it literally just went straight up to it and sucked it in. And I struck, and it sort of come to the surface, and it's proper long fish, mate. Like, it was about 3.5 foot long. And it's just like, tried to swim on the surface, but it was quite shallow there, about 1.5 foot where I hooked it, right under my feet. Sort of swam, like, thrashing on the top like a big snake. And then it's got into about 4 foot of water and just took off, mate. There was one big snag 70 yards away and it's just gone and gone and gone and gone. And I couldn't do nothing because this rod had no play in it. Short rods anyway, like, you ain't got much when they kite. But it was even shorter. It was about 4 foot, not 6 foot. And it's gone round the back of this snag. I could see it thrashing on the surface. I actually couldn't even do anything with it. And I was starting to think, I had a big size to hook on, 20 pound line at the time. And I thought, what's my cousin's like, you've lost it. He's like saying, you've, I'm like, shut up. It ain't come off yet. Do you know what I mean? And it's still pulling like that. The line's obviously gone, but I knew it was so shallow behind there. It couldn't, there's no way it could have took me in the snag. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like inches deep in there, it would have had to go through the silt, like, so it just gone round it and was just thrashing behind it. So I just kept pulling and kept it started to come back, and when it started to come back, that's when it come out from behind, and then it just literally come all the way in, mate. And as it got closer, I jumped off the wall like a scene out of a Passion for Angling, it was, but instead of jumping out of the willow tree, I jumped off the damn wall into about 5 foot of silt. The silt come up like above my jeans, mate. Yeah, it was a joke. Got stuck. My cousin started to panic, actually, because I thought I was going to go under.
Get stuck, yeah.
Yeah. Set the net up, throwed me in the net, and, yeah, ended up catching the mirror, mate.
How big was the mirror?
42 at the time. Oof. 42 at the time. And
at that point, was there other people on? Or just that one bloke?
That one bloke, yeah.
That was it?
That one bloke. That carp hadn't been caught prior either. So yeah, I caught him. And
was that job done for you on there?
Well, job done, yeah. Like, there was not much. We jumped down into like the bushes, a couple of people walked past, wow, look at the size of that. And we was like, they actually weren't that bad.
No.
Like, didn't do too bad. Yeah.
Some special fish, those, mate.
Yeah, mega carp. Like, we didn't do too bad. No one really said anything.
No,
like,
grief, no hassle.
No grief, yeah, no, no. So that's why, obviously, we was like, yeah, that was pretty smooth. Like, I was buzzing. I'd caught that one. We'll go back tomorrow. So we went back the next day, and then I caught the common off the top.
The same common you'd had in the...
Yeah,
originally.
At £41.
Right.
Off the top, 4 years later.
What a couple of days that is.
Yeah, 240s in 2 days. That was the second capture of it, yeah. And I caught it again off the surface. I think that, yeah.
What a chapter.
240s on bread. Bread flake and bread crust in 2 days. But I think the photo I've sent you is actually the one when I caught it off the surface.
Right, okay, the second time.
Yeah, the second time.
Those fish still going about today?
Yeah, still going about today. Obviously, you can fish there. So some people, I won't name it, do you know what I mean? People know when they see the photos, because London's busy enough as it is. But
that is a point. We have strategically edited the names of certain parks, park lakes and venues because respect to the people that are still fishing them.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's it. You know, you want to give the fish a bit of a... bit of respect as well. I don't want to be hounded with the popularity that these urban venues have today.
Mm.
So, yeah.
They're still out there, mate.
They are still out there, obviously. It's a lot busier than what it was. But I was lucky to have it through the golden years, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, special.
Still great fishing now.
Yeah.
It's still great now.
Yeah, it's iconic, that.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to another campaign. We've gone from, the park to the forest, mate. When you sent me the photo of this fish, mate, I think I spent a good 5 minutes just staring at it full bore on my computer screen. What a fish.
Yeah, that one, very, very mega carp.
How did you get to know that carp was there? Did you know it was there?
Mate, it's weird. Like, yeah. It's being known in angling now. Mm. I was known in angling then.
Mm.
It's like if you sat down and spoke to someone like any known angler, do you know what I mean? Alan Blair, Terry Earn, all these people, they know and get told about so many venues, mate, like where people ain't allowed to fish or don't fish or there's big uns and that. Like, put the messages through, like they would probably get of venues, like, go check this. It's unreal. So at the time, I was getting a lot of that. Like I said, met matey at Hampstead.
Yeah.
And he was like, come down to this lake, like in the city where I had the big common and the Lynn. And this one, it was just a rumour, mate. Like, literally, yeah, there's a 40-pounder in the forest pond. And I hadn't seen a photo. My mate James knew about it. He fished Wolverhampstow a lot. Wicked angler, still fish with him to this day. He told me about it. But at the time, you never, ever really saw photos. Like, it was proper under wraps, this kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean? And then I managed to get hold of a photo. I spoke to someone. I see a picture at the lake. I won't name him. But he caught a lovely fully scaled. 30-pound fully scaled. And you could see where it was. And I was speaking to him and he said, yeah, I think it was him who sent me the photo of the big mirror, but he wasn't actually fishing there at the time. I think it was just like a quick in and out job. Like, so then I went and had a look. My mate Dan was familiar with these venues.
Yeah.
And we went and had a look and we didn't actually see nothing. It was weedy, beating sunshine, was out on the motorbike, and then all of a sudden we actually see, well, he see a couple of dorsal fins break the surface, like as we was walking back to the bike. He's like, grab my shoulder, he's like, watch there. And you just see like the reflection, you know, when you just see like the glisten. Like, and it could be a bit of rubbish getting it on the surface, but you'd see a couple of them. I thought, yeah, they're fins. Like, then we started to walk back and got closer. We obviously knew it was fish and it was summertime, so we had plenty of hours. We was like, oh, should we run back, like, get the waders? We needed waders to get onto this little island. And, so that's what we done. We got on the island and straight away we saw about 5 carp, the fully scaled. We was watching out in this big clear opening. We see the fully scaled, which was 30-pounder, an upper 20 common or a mid 20 common and like a mid 20 mirror, and a couple of small cricket bats. And like in the shade, so you had the island and a little bit of a shade. It was shallow, shaded tree line and a gravel. There's a gravel spot. And we're looking out at the fish swimming there. We didn't look under our feet. And I've looked down and I've grabbed him. I've gone, oh my. And he's like jumped. He's gone, what? I've gone, you ever seen a 40 pounder? He's like, no. I was like, there's one there, mate. Do you know what I mean? I actually swore at a time. And he's like, oh my God, it was just sitting there feeding on the gravel, this massive mahogany, orangey, sandy mirror. It was huge, mate, at the time. And you wouldn't expect it. Low stock pond.
How big was it? Talk to me about the actual pond itself. How big was it?
It's quite a few acres. It's not like tiny, 3-4 acres or something like that. But yeah, and you had, I think it was like 7 carp or something.
Right.
So low stock, do you know what I mean? It was low stock at the time. I wasn't driving then either.
So you were getting there with him? Was he taking you?
Yeah, he took me on the bike and then I got the train, but that was a mission. So that day I ended up catching a fully scaled.
Right.
Which is a lovely car.
How did you catch that?
Bit of bread flake.
Love a bit of bread flake, yeah, don't
I? Bit of bread flake. Yeah. Bread bombing before the bread bomb was invented, basically.
You're on it, mate. In London, the shares of Kingsmill will be through the roof, mate, yeah. Hovis, won't they?
Warburton's.
Warburton's. Yeah, Warburton's only?
Yeah, the toasted. To be fair, yeah. But I had that one and done a couple of nights, but it was so hard going. I wasn't that type of hardcore target fish fishing. Like not getting many bites, do you know what I mean? Or if you catch, it's like needle in a haystack, literally. I sort of reverted back to fishing the park and like watching them and getting them feeding and stalking, targeting, do you know what I mean? Like I knew if I could get the big one, take a bit of bread flake, at least I know what I've hooked, do you know what I mean? And if I land it, then I've landed my target fish all the nights, and that was so hard. So I actually, yeah. I cast a bit of bread at it that day anyway, long story short, it drifted off, didn't even come back like that whole day, and then I caught the fully. A year passed and I went back again. Same situation, but I was fishing off the bank, getting them taken, and I mixers, I had a little common, then I had the other mirror, which at the time I called my mate Dan, and it was spawned up to high heaven. I didn't weigh it. It was probably 28s or something like that, maybe. Do you know what I mean? Could have been 30 pound. It was that big, like that full. I thought, we're in, what was it? I think it was July.
Oh, in July?
Yeah. It was in July or August.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, if that big one's there, that's going to be big, mate.
Mm.
Like it was supposed to have been mid 40s at the time, but it was caught a few years later. Before I caught it, a couple of years before I caught it, like 38 or 37, something like that. Spawned out though, it looked like a barbel in the photos.
Right.
Not good photos. So I knew if, like, being spawned up, it'd be big. And I said to Dan, like, can you take me and we'll go on the island again? Because I know that's the, if that's there, I've got a good chance. So I've gone on the island, put, like floaters out from the bank, they've come up, jumped out onto the island and walked onto this point. And yeah, she was just taken, like all happy, do you know what I mean? 2 or 3 carp milling about, the smaller mirror, the fully scale weren't there, a couple of 20 pound commons and the big mirror, and just swimming about, taking the odd mixer and the odd bit of leaf and stuff like that. And I thought, now's my chance. So she drifted off. I put a huge bit of crust on. I thought, she's not missing this, yeah? Bear in mind, when I cast a bit of bread flake at it the year before and it clocked it, it shot off and didn't come back. So I thought, I can't nose it because she's half clued up this one. Do you know what I mean? Been caught a couple of times and that.
How much pressure? Did you see a lot of pressure when you were fishing with the wranglers?
No one.
Okay.
No one. People knew about it. Like, the lake is fairly known to, pardon me, anglers around the area that that fish is there and stuff. But it's like, whoever's got the balls of steel, fair play to fishing it and catching it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's come back in, right? And I've got this big bit of crust on. And it's perfect out, shining sun, crystal, tap clear water, watching this huge sandy mirror just swim around, taking the odd bit of like leaf and floater. And she's come up to the bread and like nosed it. And she's literally where you are. And I'm standing.
That close?
Yeah, that close. Like literally in tap clear water. Got a sawn off 20 pound line, size 2 hook, and a big chunk of crust. Come up, nosed it, and turned away. And I thought, nah, like, that's not right. Do you know what I mean? She must know. She must have seen the line or something. But then she just swam off slowly and took a tiny little leaf. I was like, what? So I thought, yeah, well, she ain't spooked. And she sort of, I was watching it, mate. Like, swam off, went round along the back tree line and come back. So I reeled in and I put a tiny bit of crust on. Because I thought that leaf that she's taken was a proper small little bit. She obviously weren't too sure about half the loaf of bread that I stuck on the hook.
So I put still on a size 2, yeah?
Still on a size 2, yeah. It looked really funny, mate, to be fair, because I said to my mate, Dan, come. Because I didn't have much bread. I only had like one slice or whatever. So he brought me some more bread and stood behind me. I had like a bush in front of me, literally fishing over this little bush. And yeah, I said, give me a little bit. So he's given me a little bit and I've put it on the hook and it's just about gone out there. So I've literally dipped it and flicked it as she's coming back round. And it sort of not even made a ripple, mate. It was that small, like on the surface, which was good because I think if she would have heard a plop or anything, she'd have been gone. So she's come in gracefully, mate. I was like, I wish back then I filmed all of this because it would have been the most epic footage, do you know what I mean, ever. But I didn't. I was more involved in my own angling. Like, last thing I wanted to do is have a big GoPro on my head or something like that. I just loved the moment in my own fishing.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's come gracefully swimming up to the bit of bread and just literally come up so slow and just took it. And you could see the line, do you know what I mean, sinking away, bubbles coming out of her gills and that. She's just sitting there. And Dan's like, she's got it, bruv, like poking me in the back. I'm like, I know. I'm just waiting for her to swim off. And as she swam off, he's like, she's got it. I'm like, I know, mate. Like, do you know what I mean? Literally about 10 seconds, I've hooked into her. And that's the best feeling when the rod hoops over. Because I've had it a few times where it just it comes out, mate. Like, that's why sometimes they're either going to take it or they're not. They're going to want to eat it or they ain't. So hooked into her. And straight away, I've just been wrenched off this island through this bush. Into the lake.
In.
Yeah, wrench me in. I didn't have my clutch set and I'm only little, when I? So I've hooked into it and it's just wrenched me straight in, gone through the bushes and that. Dan's grabbed me and like it was really silty. It's such an old lake, mate. Like really silty. And she's just stripping and stripping. I'm not really having too much control because I'm worried about going in. Like the silt, the water coming over my waders because it was so silty. Dan's like giving me the almighty wedgie, holding me up as I'm like gliding through the silt, trying to keep in contact with his fish. Anyway, all of a sudden, it's just become really light, like weeded me up and then become really light. Like, I was literally pumping it in like that and I was like, it's come off, mate. And I'm holding the rod in my hand, like literally like that. I'm like, can you believe it's come off? He's like, what do you mean? I was like, it's come off. He's like, nah, shut up. And I'm standing there like this, as talking to him. Do you know what I mean? And he's like, nah. So I'm thinking, I've just got a hook and line. It's literally like I'm reeling nothing in. And I can see just like this small little bit of Canadians coming along the surface. And then as it's got to literally where you are, there was like the little tiniest bit of reflection of the brown shoulders of her sticking through the weed, and her tail was just literally just moving like that, like, and she was just coming straight in, mate. And he's like, oh my God. I was like, she's still there. She's still there. So he's set the net up, gone to net it and tried to swoop that bloody hard that the net's just snapped at the spreader block. Yeah. So he's grabbed the arms and hoofed her into the net. I was like, oh mate, look at that. Got her onto the bank. Looked huge, like a barrel. Like, oh, it was mega carp, mate. Tiny overslung little mouth. Wicked fish. Yeah, unhooked her. There was an old net that was left on the island from God knows how long that had been there. Probably from someone fishing it years and years ago who was obsessed with the same fish. Put her in that net as well. So put her in two nets and secured her. I thought, you are not getting away. And called his mate, Russell, to come and bring a proper mat and a set of scales because we didn't have a proper mat. Literally just threw on the hoodie and that to unhook her. And stuff, and a fish of that age and that gratitude needs some care and attention. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, called him. He brought a mat down, brought some scales down. I let them weigh her, and she was 40 pounds, 1 ounce. So, a giant carp. Still, this is a big carp. Some people would say a 40 pounder ain't big, but for a rare, unknown, old carp like that, and I think that was. My third 40-pounder off the top from London.
Yeah, that's impressive. Seriously impressive, that.
Yeah. Mega fish.
What? That photo
still is my favourite one to this day.
Is it?
Yeah.
I can see why, mate.
Still, yeah.
That is special. And then, again, on there, nothing really left to catch in that, is there?
No, that was
job
it.
Job done.
Move on. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Some fish there.
But that's how I sort of started to target my fish, like... That stalking approach.
Sight fishing and selecting.
Yeah, I still do to this day. It's a lot harder now because a lot of people are doing it on them parks and that. But then venues that are left alone and no one really fishes for them, like, that's the best way, especially if there's not many like of that calibre or size and you only want to target them and you're just limited time.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way to do it. Otherwise, you've got to bore them out and sit behind rods and it's all a luck game, isn't it? You don't know what's going to come along.
Yeah. Let's talk about a more recent campaign. We're not going to talk too much in depth on this because I know that yourself and ESP are going to do, hopefully, a very nice piece where you will do a very nice video on it, mate. But a certain linear was sent to me, caught from a canal, mate, which was equally beautiful and special. It's a different sort of venue.
Yeah,
it's not a lake, it's a canal. Talk to me about your sort of time on there.
Well, I'm still fishing there today. The canals and river systems I fell in love with from not only being a kid fishing the rivers, but sort of fishing the Coppermill Stream and Wolverhamstow. That sort of, I really fell in love with the rivers and the canals from then.
Why do you think that is? Just because it's not a dead sir. It's different. It's moving water.
I don't know.
No.
Like, now, to this day, I only fish the river. Don't get me wrong, I do fish lakes. Like, I caught a nice fish from a lake not far from me, a big mirror of a small handful of carp in it. Never seen a photo of it before. People never, don't think it's ever been caught. So they are still out there.
Yeah.
And I do still fish lakes. But as far as my campaign fishing goes, I'll only fish the canal or the river, and then big wild pits. Like, it's the only really thing that attracts me.
You like that unknown element?
Yeah, the unknown element. Like, and there's not really much about, unless it's a huge lake, like, with low stock and that.
Yeah.
It's more anglers, mate. I like to be left alone, and a lot of my fishing's either... I haven't got a lot of time. Well, I have got a lot of time, but I don't like doing a lot of nights and stuff like that. So I'll bait a lot and look a lot and then fish on good conditions. So if there's not many anglers about, not saying I hate anglers, but it's nice to be have the confidence that no other anglers have fished that baited area.
Yeah.
If I'm baiting for sometimes 3 months, mate, like I bait till March through till like, do you know what I mean? May, right before spawning and the onslaught, like, and catch a load. It's just nice having the confidence that no anglers have sort of tampered with your fishing.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go, you should be catching, like, in the time. So, yeah, that's sort of the element of the canals and stuff that I like, because they ain't fished as hard, and you can sort of get away with baiting them, especially them urban ones.
Again, the grapevine of people that give you information and tell you what's about. Did you know that this particular fish was in that stretch of canal, or was it just, it looks good for it, I've heard of fish and I'll go down and
Well, I knew about fishing there for years. To be fair, anglers have told me about carp in there for years. My mate James, again, he lost a big one out of there years ago. So I'd always had a look and stuff and had a few sessions down there. But that system, that whole canal system and river system, you don't know what's going to come along.
No.
You know, that fish could not be in that section now. Do you know what I mean? It could be five locks up or could be somewhere in the Thames. Do you know what I mean? You don't know. So the element of surprise and the unknown, that is the big chase as well with a river and canal. Like I was saying, that's what I like in carp fishing. And I've caught carp that Terry Earns caught out the Thames, out of the canal and the river, do you know what I mean? The river that I fish. So it is the element and the chase. My mate told me that it had been caught. He said that, mate, he had caught one that was like this inky black linear. And I was like, fucking hell, that sounds good. But didn't even ever see photos of it. And he's like, he showed me a photo of it on his phone. And my mate's not going to lie, do you know what I mean? And we're just like, fucking hell, well, maybe. Do you know what I mean? It is true, and hopefully it is still about. Didn't ever see it. They're very elusive. So you don't get that opportunity in that site fishing too much.
No.
It is more sort of baiting and fishing on the right moons and the right areas. I'd fished this canal leading up to that capture quite a few years, so I knew the area they'd come pre-spawning. Do you know what I mean? And they'd sort of gather in them shorter sections, because you get different locks and different sections that are long and short. So to fish this section where obviously it lived, it was a long section and involved a lot of walking. And to narrow it down, that time of year I'd sort of fish that area, knowing that the carp wouldn't be too far behind. And I only knew this because of all my homework from years prior. So it's literally, I can't call it a campaign, although I am campaigning on it. It wasn't particularly for that fish. It was just sort of having a campaign on the canal, do you know what I mean? And so we've rocked up, good moon, time of year, they're turning up, and flicked them out in the middle, right? And his mate was actually fishing just down the bank, my pal's pal. A nice guy, and he had a little mirror. So I was like, well, they're in the area. Why don't we just do the night? She's like, sweet, why not? Like, so we actually, at that time, we were just like staying up all night, doing all nighters, just chilling, making sure that no one was going to touch our gear. So that's why we was pretty much staying up all night.
What's it like?
Not great. Not great. Nah, very rough.
Talk to me about stuff that's happened.
Well, I told you earlier, didn't I?
Is that there?
Yeah. That was there. So the same stretch, little bit further up, but just baiting up in the middle of the night. Three boys come along on pedal bikes and pull out like knives from films, mate. Like these big Rambo knives. Jesus Christ. Massive.
What?
Scary weapons. I don't know how they even carry things like that on them. But, they didn't really take anything off me and mate baiting up, but it was more sort of gang violence, I think, the whole thing to do with what they're doing. But
sounds idyllic, mate, that.
Yeah. It's just I don't want that when you're fishing though, do you?
No. No. No.
You just don't know who's had a bad day.
True. Yeah, you're putting yourself in a situation potentially that ain't really favourable.
Not worth a carp, definitely not.
No, no.
But we didn't ever get, I wasn't fishing then. We didn't get hassled much when we were fishing. Like, most of the time, no one would say anything, really. Mm. They'd probably think, who's these nutters staying up all night trying to catch a fish? Like, as far as everyone else is aware. So yeah, it's not for the faint-hearted.
Have you had sort of issues on with like general public? It could be people on boats, could be generally when you fished around London? Or is it generally the public, a lot of hype?
The public, yeah. It gets, yeah, a lot of...
Go on, talk to me about that.
Just all them park lakes and that, mate. Like, obviously, it's not for everyone, is it, seeing someone catch a carp and, like, you're going to have your, I don't know what you'd call people that.
Yeah, you sort of animal rights activists.
Yeah, sort of stuff like that. Like, they think it's, to us, obviously, we're not harming. We're taking massive care. But to them, it's like the worst thing ever. But yeah, shouted at, called scumbags and all stuff like that. And people threatening, cameras in faces and stuff like that. Like, yeah, mate, it's got a couple of times I've had it. Caught a big one out of this dock with my pal Dan. And some fellas actually had the fish in the net, mate. I didn't break the net down. I literally just lifted the net to, like, go and put it, literally lift it up over this fence to, like, rest it in this little arm bit.
Okay.
Like, still the same section, obviously, but it was just, like, quite dodgy where it was left because it was very high. The fish weren't properly in the water. Do you know what I mean? The net was high off the bank, so the fish was flapping. So I literally lifted it to move it. This geezer's, like, all saying stuff to us, and he's grabbed my net pole, mate, whilst I've got the fish in the net and, like, yanking it and stuff. And I was like, what are you doing? So I've pulled it like that, and literally I've got this, like, a 30-pound mirror as well, do you know what I mean? And it's all flapping, and he's trying to grab the pole. So I've, like, literally, like, gone to whack him with it, do you know what I mean? And I've got the fish in the net, like, and then he stopped then, obviously.
What was he saying? Who was it?
He was just like, what are you doing? Like, grab the net pole and, like, yanking it. And it's like, mate, I want to get the fish in the water. Do you know what I mean? So, like, moved it, and then I had the net, and I just, like, went like that. You know that noise, like, if you get a stick, it was like, vroom, like, literally. And I think he thought, oh, maybe not, like.
Yeah, not today.
Yeah, not today. But obviously, if I had the fish in my hand, mate, what are you doing? Do you know what I mean? It's crazy. There's a video of some young kid. He caught a bream out of one of the docks, and it was circulating on social media. And some boy, he, like, took the bream off him, mate.
What?
He's like, what? He's like, I'm going to take it home. Oh. I'm going to get my mum to cook it.
Oh,
it's a funny video, actually, to be fair.
What about, like, people trying to steal tackle or violence and stuff? Not potentially people that are that. Nothing like that?
Nah, nothing like that. Nothing like that. Just people pissed up, booting your gear and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? And my mate's had his rods thrown in a couple of times by people pissed. Just got to ignore it sometimes.
It's fascinating. I remember we talked just before we started filming about like how your mind works. Like, I think how, like, we'll go back to this linear and this capture on the canal, but how you even think in that sort of urban way about where people potentially could ruin your fishing, where things like boat traffic, where things like people coming out of pubs, where, like, potential estate routes are for stuff. That is all factored in your thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, I was saying that to you earlier, wasn't it? Every time I got a bait up, I got to take all this into consideration, like, where I can actually get in and fish, because obviously you, on the canals, you might have a boat where you're pre-baiting. It might be over your spot when you go to fish there. Pardon, or you might not be able to get your rods in. And you've baited and not been able to actually fish. And then you've got to worry about people coming up and down the towpath, potentially knocking your rods in. You got to worry about other anglers. You don't want them to see the bait or see the fish. And then you want to be safe as well. I've got kids now. I've got a beautiful little boy.
Yeah.
So I do factor that, although, touch wood, nothing's ever happened or anything bad. Even that night, them boys done that. They didn't actually do anything, thank God.
Yeah.
But I don't need that. Who needs that? You don't want to go fishing and have big knives pulled out on you.
No.
Like, at the end of the day, I love my fishing. It's an element of work as well for me in some respects. So when you're going to work and enjoying yourself, doing what you love, you don't want to be confronted by violence, do you?
The sort of London fishing scene within the people that do it, we talked earlier about it being more and more publicised in recent years and it being very different. It strikes me, and don't take this the wrong way, but it strikes me as quite a very sort of clicky, very secretive circle. Like there's odd pods of people that will talk to people, but as a whole, it seems what you've got is really, really protected.
Yeah. I suppose, like I said to you, it's mad, mate, because the whole urban scene in fishing has taken off through the roof.
Mm.
To me and a group of small people, that's all we've done is fish these places because that's all we had to. Do you know what I mean? We wanted to catch beautiful carp. We lived in London, so we went fishing. And in reality, they were the venues we fished. Yeah. You now have people traveling in and getting into carp fishing who are new, fishing these venues by choice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I know it's everyone's entitled to their own choice, but we didn't have a choice. That was just what we done. So for them places to be ruined via that, it's upsetting.
When you say ruined, what do you mean? You mean fish caught too much? You mean people just basically numbers of people fishing the places?
Yeah, you can't say fish caught too much. Like everyone's into, look at certain syndicate waters and circuit waters. These fish are targeted day in, day out, get caught all the time.
Yeah.
So it's nothing to do with protecting the fish, like, especially fish that I've caught. I wouldn't worry. Like, if I've caught a carp, why am I going to worry if someone else catches it? I've already caught it. It's just more like the whole, everything gets blown up. Do you know what I mean? And everyone starts to find out, and like, everyone knows now about all these park lakes and stuff and some of these little pits and stuff that I was fishing. They're like, a certain one you could fish, it was like me and like two other anglers on there. In recent years, like, you would have it, it'd be closed on bank holidays, so you could do day sessions on there,
yeah?
Left alone. And where it got busier now, I had a look the other day, just literally being nosy, walking past, and they've opened it up on bank holidays because there was that many anglers on there. Mm. There was like 14 anglers on one bank holiday a couple of years ago. Like, there, I go past it all the time, right near my house. Every night I go past, there's people fishing, even in the winter, every night.
How has that factored for you? Have you had clashes with people sort of on yours? Because you must get, I mean, people following you, trying to tap onto wherever you're baiting, sort of looking at where you're going. And it can't be easy to sort of keep that,
do you know,
as
what
secret.
It's, I used to get into a lot of angling politics via that. Not so much our fishing on my spot and stuff like that. It was more having respect. Mm. So like, if you're baiting a certain area, like, leave matey to it and whatever on waters where there was other anglers.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, like I said, I was fishing in these waters, the little parks and that, I was the only one fishing them. There was no one else. So I could get away with it. I didn't have that back then. Then if you get talking to people, you say they're going to start fishing it, you just say to them, well, leave this area, please, out of respect and whatever. A lot of people were all right. But it's sort of, yeah, it's just, now I look at it as in, like, if someone wants to follow me about or catch them beautiful carp that I've caught, it's just, it's a nice thing, really. Do you know what I mean? As a young lad, actually, he caught a nice, fully scaled, and another nice carp from another park lake. And it's actually nice to see, mate. Like, someone who's not named the place, they've actually kept it quiet. Do you know what I mean? And, like, having their nice photos, catching these nice carp, enjoying what I enjoyed all them years ago.
Yeah.
And not taking the mick. Do you know what I mean? Not ruining somewhere. Like, some people actually full on, how do you say it? They're not built for that type of fishing.
Right.
Not got the etiquette
for
that type of fishing. So they ruin it, which is sad to see. But it's just all about having respect, isn't it, really, for that type of angling.
Mm. Going back to the canal and the linear, you talked about baiting up, you talked about picking a spot. Talk to me about what you were putting in, quantities and where.
So I actually wasn't baiting when I caught the linear. That wasn't off a baited area.
I wasn't?
No, that wasn't off a baited area. But when I have been baiting, like I said, the area I've been picking is all them factors boil down to it. Areas where I notice the bank access is good, the towpath it is quiet, you've not got a lot of people around, not a lot of anglers, but it's hard, mate. Like, my fishing, I was doing nights. Do you know what I mean? I'm getting down there at 11, 12 o'clock at night, leaving at 6 in the morning. So I'm not seen by anglers. That's it. No one else. Because as soon as I'm seen, that's it. Spot's blown.
Done, isn't
it? I was told by like my pal who speaks to someone else. He's like, these two people want to know where you're fishing, Alf. Like, they keep, you keep turning up when they're leaving at like 10 at night. That's why I started going a bit later. And they want to know where you're fishing. Because they know you're catching. Because you keep coming back. It's like, how can you live like that, mate? Like, how can I actually go fishing like this? It's starting to do my head in. Like, because if I'm there in the day, they're going to see where I'm fishing. And they're just going to be straight on my spot.
That was my point to you before.
Like, they're actually wanting to know where I am to fish my baited area.
Yeah. That was my question to you before, mate. Because I think there's only, as things, have, as you say, have been publicised and more people come to us, you need to keep finding things. And you can't just keep finding, like, unicorns, uncaught worldies. There's going to be a point at which there isn't them. But in the meantime, that's not going to stop people seeing you as that urban sort of carp hunter and following you, mate. So I can imagine, the sort of struggles of having to sort of pitch your angling around midnight so nobody tags onto the back of what you're doing.
Yeah, it's hard, mate. It is hard. That's why the canal's all right. You got a few anglers. Someone said to me, oh, you didn't tell me you was catching and all that. You're supposed to be my mate. But it's like, do you know what I mean? I don't tell no one. Like, this is like a little bit of my living and my enjoyment. It's not to be ruined, mate. Like, if I tell people, you might not necessarily go and fish my spot yourself, but you might start fishing that area. You might tell other people. You don't know. It's happened to me hundreds of times in the past. I've learned by my mistakes from being involved in that type of fishing for many years now.
Yeah.
When you're catching and something's rocking, don't tell a soul.
Yeah.
Literally.
Tell them when it's done.
Tell them when it's done, yeah.
Yeah. The linear, mate. Talk me through the capture of that.
So the linear, that was sort of everything. Moons aligned, stars aligned, everything was right. The carp were coming into the area and went down with my pal. And another fellow angler was fishing. He had a little mirror. So we thought, why not? We got the gear in the car. We'll go get some dinner, come back. No qualms. We knew no one was going to be fishing there anyway. So we went and got some dinner and come back. And from previous, we had caught 30 pounders from there before. And had caught from there before, same time of year. And it actually worked out, mate. That night fell on the same day when my mate had a 30 the year before. So we knew it was perfect timing. Anyway, got the rods out, fishing out in the middle, just pop-ups, like big, bright.
Yeah, talk to me about your rig selection there, components and sort of, because canals, I mean, they can have all sorts in, mate.
I sort of, pardon me, I will change my rig setup sort of and adapt it to where I'm, how I'm fishing. Like, if I'm fishing in the edge, I might use a drop-off in line or something like that, or a leg clip, a short rig. But fishing out in the middle, I was generally fishing helicopter rigs, just so I knew I was presented, and just lengthening and shortening the length of the rig to what the bottom felt like. Dropping my leads as well. It was pretty gravelly. I always fish simple rigs though, like blowback style rigs. I'm always simple, to be fair. Going back, obviously, I've fished chods, hinge stiffs, all these mad rigs that everyone comes up with. I've fished them all over the years. But going down now to the root of saying these carp, they're not clever and riggy. It's just about getting on them. Like, once you're on them, then that's a reliable rig. Yeah. It has been for many years. Blowback rig, put a shot on it and a pop-up, or put a bottom bait in it and take the shot off. That's it. You're fishing. So I was literally just fishing pop-ups, knowing I was presented, and scattering a handful of bait, heavily glugged bait. So on, obviously, the rivers is soaked in, isn't it? And leaking off whilst you're fishing, especially when you're doing short sessions. So we come back, rods out, donk, donk, donk. He's put two out, I've put two out. and he's had a bite, little common. And then we're sitting there and thinking, oh, not much is happening. We've had a little one, not much showing. And then he's had another one, a lovely mid-30 common.
Ooh, nice.
Which is a big one. Do you know what I mean? Like, I say it as if, like, these fish are, you catch them daily, you don't. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, he's been fishing there 8 years. That's the biggest order and the only 30 common he's caught. So that goes to show. Full moon, big common. Put it in the sack. Everything was sweet. It was acting a bit dodgy in the sack, like a bit like,
you know, listing a bit.
Listing a little bit. So yeah, kept an eye on it and then it was fine, yeah? Anyway, my rod's gone. It's about 3 a.m. now. I'm playing it and it's sort of like a mad take. We didn't have buzzers or nothing.
No, just laid your rod on the ground.
Just laying our rods on the ground, put them in a line clip, lick a little Rizzler. You know, like a little roll up Rizzler, because they're white, aren't they? And just stick it on the line. You just see it zoom through the ring. Like, you know, on the canals and that, I'd walk up and down the bank. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd walk up 100 yards and you can look down and you can see, like, the Rizzler. If it's moo, if it's gone, you know you're on. Do you know what I mean?
Some urban gangster indicator.
Yeah, mate, it's wicked. When it zooms through the rings as well, it's like, whoosh. Yeah, it's mega. So, anyway, Rizzler's gone zooming through the rings, rods hooped round. And it wasn't really an eventful fight, mate, to be fair. Pretty, like, came up in the water, dropped the lead, up and down, didn't feel big. Bit of weed on his head and come in. And he's like, that's a banger. And it was dark, we didn't have head torches, just a bit of street lighting. And he's like, that's a proper banger, I think it's that Lynn. I was like, what Lynn? Because obviously, it's like, you don't know what you're fishing for. And he's like, I think it's that black one. I was like, what do you mean? Anyway, so he's lifted it out, we've put it on a mat, and I'm like, oh my God. I was like, that's a good one as well. He's like, yeah, that's a 30. And mate, it was like all inky black and pinky shoes. Sacked it up till the morning.
Yeah.
Started acting a bit funny, yeah? I thought, what is going on? Why are these fish acting like that? I had another one, a scaly 20-pounder. So we hadn't baited. We had just rocked up and fished and caught.
That's that is real good going, isn't it?
That was real good going. But this is all because we had known from years of angling, do you know what I mean? Yeah. On that venue, like I was saying to you, like years and years of angling, you get to learn certain lakes, certain stretches of canal, river, and you know where the carp turn up at certain times of year. So anyway, in the morning, we've woken up, right? Listen to this. And there was like a massive fire in the distance.
Right.
And the fish were acting proper dodgy, mate. Like, we was thinking, what's going on? So anyway, weighed the linear, 32, took the photos, mega carp, inky black, no words. Whether it's got a little bit of koi in it, maybe. Like I was saying to you, people stock the canals with anything, as whatever the public venues do. You don't know where it's come from. But a mega carp, absolutely unreal, like a proper demon-looking fish. Male carp. And yeah, one that obviously is the highlight so far. I've had bigger carp than that out of stretch. Some mega scalies as well. But yeah, that's one that's sort of really sought after. And that got a lot of interest.
I bet.
A lot of interest. People were like, wow, for a canal carp, that's unreal.
Well, you're still there, aren't you, doing it?
Yeah, still there doing it, obviously. Got a little boat. Just enjoying my fishing. Nice and quiet. Hopefully it stays that way.
And hopefully, in the not too distant future, as we said before, ESP.
Yeah, before ESP are going to... and myself, I've been filming a lot of stuff with my handy cam down there. Last year when I was having a good run of fish, Jack come down, filmed a lot of them. Obviously, I've got target fish as well.
Yeah.
And I've got mates that are still fishing there. Yeah. So I'm documenting it now. We could put a video out now, but I'm going to document it and keep it quiet until obviously I've had what I'm happy with and my mates are sort of happy, done. Yeah. And then release a mega film to share some epic fishing with people. Yeah. That's not for the faint-hearted.
There's fish activity. You said they're acting weird. Any reason for that?
So there was a big fire, right?
Yeah.
And it turned out there was some illegal cultivation going on in some factories, right?
Oh my God.
on some massive scale, though, yeah? Like, big industrial scale. And it had caught a light, yeah?
Yeah.
And next door was a chemical farm.
Oh, no.
Farm, sorry. Chemical cleaning, like, company.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that had caught a light as well. So, the fire engines are hosing everything down, and it's washing all into the brook, right? All the water that then washed into the canal, yeah? And then, anyway, there was a huge fish kill that week, massively. Not many carp died, a few little ones.
Right.
But that's why they was obviously acting weird, because that had been going on all night, and obviously we couldn't see it.
No.
Like, so that was washing in, and obviously it was washing down river. And that's why it was like almost a weird night, and I don't know how we caught them. I don't know, because the oxygen levels and everything must have been all weird. Like,
but you don't know what's going in there.
They might have thought this might be my last feed.
He's been on here for 8 years. I better give him his due.
Yeah.
No, but that's a great. Not only is it rock hard fishing, full stop, because you're never really sure where they are. We've talked about the movement of the fish in the system.
Yeah,
but you've got those sort of things to contend with as well that you can't really control, can you?
No, yeah, everything is such a polluted section of river. And it's, you just never know what's turning up, what's dead, do you know what I mean? I found a lovely big common dead a couple of years ago. And you just don't know what goes, what's here through the locks, gone down there, not only gone through a lock, in another river. Like, we've caught them all from different sections of river and canal all over the city from different stretches. So you can't ever target fish. You can't think, oh, that fish is in there, let me target it, because it could be a million miles away.
I was quite, after talking to you, I was quite, not totally surprised, but I was surprised at the number of good fish that are in the system.
Yeah.
I think you get the perception of, like, maybe, considering I haven't done much river fishing, especially near you at all, you get the feeling that there are good fish, but you get the feeling that there's like one or two, when in reality, there are a lot of good. They're not easy to catch, don't get me wrong, but there are good numbers of good fish, aren't they?
Yeah, there are. You think, you've got to consider most sections, which is a big un, you've got probably a 30 pounder in most sections of canal and river, which is a huge fish.
Yeah,
do you know
totally.
What I mean? It's huge. Like, you can go all the way out of London, and a lot of canals and stuff. Oh, yeah, the big ones in here is like 35. And where was I? I was all the way in Kent filming for Sipography. It's like 30 pounders in them canals down there, like mid 30s and that and stuff. You'd be surprised, mate.
Yeah. Oh, I am. I already have been from talking to you. Future wise, looking forward for you. Targets, apart from this campaign that you're on the canal, are you looking elsewhere? Have you got specific things that are on the horizon?
Yeah, to be fair, I've been fishing a couple of huge lakes and just unknown wild fishing. Nice carp, very hard to catch, but just keeps me sane, you know? Not a lot of angling pressure. Can do my thing, can enjoy it, and when they come along, they're very special. And that's what I like. Like I said, from a young age, I could deter what type of carp I like to fish for, and it's them special ones. And to be fair, growing up fishing in London, I've done nigh on all of it, apart from if I'd said I'd caught every carp out of Walthamstow Reservoir Complex, I'd be lying. And obviously the rivers and canals, but all the park lakes and stuff like that, and the other lakes, like, it's done, mate.
Yeah,
I've caught
done.
A lot of them. And most of them, yeah.
Do you ever think that you would go and completely change your style of angling later down the line and sort of look at maybe dating complexes, maybe, I don't know, maybe something along those lines? Or do you think you'd always have to chase those sort of mysteries or special ones?
Do you know what it is? It's like, I suffer with like anxiety and stuff like that, and it affects me and in a lot of ways where I can feel uncomfortable. And day tickets, I don't like sitting at places like that for days on end. I get very anxious and stuff, but I don't mind going for like a day's floater fishing, because some of them have some incredible carp in. Like I said to you, my mate, he's had a couple of big carp, hasn't he, out of Orchid, two of the big ones, off the surface. And I say to him, oh, I want to come and do a day's floater fishing. He's like, but you got to do 24 hours.
Yeah.
And that's like the minimum. I'm like, well, sometimes in the middle of the night, mate, if I get anxious, I just want to go home.
Does it get to that extent?
Not really. Sometimes it does, though.
Right.
Like, where I just got to go and get in the car and drive to take my mind off things and get focused and then bring myself back to everything's all right. Like, you're going to be all right. Don't panic. You know what I mean?
And is that based around people and
no,
being in that? No.
No, it just comes on. It just comes on right. randomly. Do you know what right. I mean? It's,
so to be able to have your own sort of, yeah, your own space and control those elements.
Of everything. You just yeah. feel more comfortable in yeah. as a person and in your own environment. Do you know yeah. what I mean? Like if you know if that gate's locked and you can't get out it's and different. Then you start thinking, what if something happens to the baby? What if something happens to, yeah. do you know what I mean? The missus, why, if, do you know what I mean? I can't get out of here. I'm locked in. And you just start overthinking, mate. That's what draws it. That's what brings everything on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've been there. I can empathise with that, especially when it comes to life-changing events of having a kid. I was never, I wouldn't say I'm anxious at all now, and I never really have been, but I remember, and I said it in my podcast, when I had my first child, your head changes a lot, and you do think about that. So I completely empathise with that point of view. I also can empathise with having control of a situation like that, where you can, if you're on a canal or whatever at midnight, you can just clear off, can't you?
Yeah.
You got no worries.
Jump in a car and go home, yeah.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. For you, in terms of work, you've sort of niched a sort of a role with ESP whereby you can do your own fishing, it's documented, the career path's there. Are you looking at getting involved in anything else career-wise, or are you happy with exactly what you're doing now?
Do you know what? It's nice. It is good what I'm doing now. I find a balance that ESP, like, we've got a little video coming out soon of me talking about the free lining and the targeting fish on worms and stuff like that instead right. of bread, something a bit different.
Okay.
Because I was saying that big lake recently that I caught a big one from was on worms. I started using worms and stuff more recently. And we went out and done a little like in session sort of live film called Nice Common and sort of added a few snips of my stuff into there. But yeah, no, I do. I do feel like obviously that it is sort of, I'm very comfortable now. I can yeah. involve my bits of filming and stuff with Elliot doing sipography stuff that doesn't affect my own fishing. That was paramount to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
We come up with a series of, you take me to venues, do you know what I mean? Not yeah. really day tickets because obviously we like to fish sort of more quieter venues than that. But if deters, we've got a series where try and catch a carp from every county in the UK.
Yeah.
And he names the venues, gives me a postcode and I turn up. So it don't affect my fishing. It's a great viewing.
Yeah, I remember seeing you did one on Dis, didn't you, in Norfolk?
Yeah, in Norfolk. And another what was it, Suffolk?
Yeah.
I fished a day ticket there. Yeah,
it's a brilliant series. Such good stuff, the old sipography content. Elliot yeah. and Rich do a brilliant job.
Yeah, no, it is good. It is good. People love it.
But you enjoy that because it's like, it's standalone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's standalone, yeah. obviously, but that isn't my own fishing, so sometimes I do look forward to it, mate.
Yeah.
Like the last one I went out with Dave was fishing a massive wild lake, mate. And like 4 or 5 fish that night, 30 pounder as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Don't know if they've ever been caught. Like, so it is mega fishing. Do you know what I mean?
What do
at
you
the
think?
Same time, and I get to see. I always smile to myself when I'm doing something like that, thinking like I'm waking up and going to work, going fishing, and I'm getting to see the beautiful world. Do you know what I mean? I'm not sat behind a computer in an office in London
yeah.
watching numbers. Like doing my head in. Like yeah. who could ask? That's why you got to be grateful, wouldn't you?
100%.
Got to be grateful. I'm doing something that most people would chop an arm or a leg off for.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you've worked hard for that as well.
Yeah, I have worked hard for it. Obviously, it's not like a something where I'm at the stage of full time.
No.
So I'm in the process of starting my own little business, selling hook baits as well. Unique pop-ups for anglers. little range that I've developed over the years in my own fishing to obviously give something back, see other people succeed and balance everything out. So I've got a little job, a part-time job, and then I've got my fishing as well. Do you know what I mean? So it's a nice balance. You know, I think sometimes you can get, I've always said I don't want to fish full time.
No.
And I don't fish full time. Right now I can fish every night of the week, but I've got a life. You know, I've got a life, I've got a family. I might be involved with it, might bait up and do this and it, but I couldn't sit there five nights a week fishing.
How important is that, do you think? How important has family been and the fact that, I mean, you had your lad, you said you were 19, didn't you? So you had him early. How important that's been in terms of your life? Because you could have quite easily, as you said, fallen into sort of full-time just angling, couldn't you?
I could have easily. Yeah, like you think if that didn't happen, my girlfriend was always supportive of that, fishing and stuff. But you think you could be sat there fishing five nights a week and not have much social life, much friends and anything else. It's nice to have friends. I've met a lot of good people through fishing, but then I've got a lot of friends that don't fish, and it's always nice, do you know what I mean? To just seclude yourself when you're in, sort of separate yourself from that, because I'm around it all the time. I pick up my phone, that's all I see is fishing. I go to the lake, it's all I'm seeing is carp anglers, and it is nice to have a break sometimes. So having an actual social life, and not full time in that one thing, because it's hard to say, but you can see why people say, like, when you're involved in something so much, you learn to hate it. Do you know what I mean? I remember, like, working at a bait company and stuff, you'd constantly anglers rolling through the door, constant, and you end up not even want to go fishing because you've heard about everyone catching, seeing all their captures. It gets to like the weekend or whatever, you're like, I can't be bothered. Like, I'm sick of hearing it all week. So it's nice to balance everything. Do you know what I mean? Have a few days out, although I'm involved in a little bit of fishing and making hook baits or whatever, it's not full on. Do you know what I mean?
You can switch off from it. Yeah.
So it's nice having a balance, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. As you say, family, your business, which is fishing, your fishing. In a similar way to what you said about sort of fishing the venues you fish and being able to, whenever you feel, be able to do what you want, mate. I completely see that.
I've never done no more than like two nights over it, ever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Two nights on a bounce, even when I used to fish a lot, like I'd just do like a Friday to a Sunday, that was it. Never done longer than that.
One thing I wanted to talk to you about before we conclude a very interesting podcast. I've really enjoyed it, mate. I knew I would do. Other species. That Drennan video you did with those perch, mate. I think I've watched that, and this is not me just saying it to you in a podcast. I think I've watched that like four or five times. I thought it was brilliant. Like the whole style of how it was shot, but also the perch. Unbelievable things.
Yeah.
Pretty similar to like those special carp in terms of you searching them out. Definitely a passion for you, no? Those perch. Any other species?
Do you know what? Perch, I'll be honest, I can sometimes be a bit more protective of them than I can carp, mate, because I've got a lot of respect for them. Other species, yeah, I've caught lots of, like I said, barbel, chub, stuff like that, bream. I've got a couple of photos on my phone of like the big bream out of the canal that I've caught. Doubles, like 15 pounders and stuff, huge bream. Like, I'll make an effort to, when I catch a couple, even if I've been carp fishing, to have a nice shot on that. Do you know what I mean? I will in the future. But tench, yeah, I don't target stuff like that. But a couple of winters ago, about 3 years ago, I was trying to catch the gudgeon record from a London stream.
Were you?
Done about, six or seven sessions, like in the winter, catching huge gudgeon.
What are we talking here? What's a huge gudgeon?
Well, got to be about 4 ounces, isn't it?
That's ridiculous.
But like these gudgeon are huge, mate. Do you know what I mean? Like the size of that bottle.
No, I'm not having that.
Yeah?
That's like, not a gudgeon,
like,
mate.
Huge.
That's been hybridised,
I'll show you some photos after. You'll be like, wow.
Can you imagine catching that as a kid on a whip at the canal? I'd be running off to like the shop to buy a camera to take a photo of it.
Like baby barbel, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they're mega. If they grew to like 10 pounds, you wouldn't fish for anything else, would you?
I think they're one of the first things you catch, aren't they? Like,
yeah.
You don't see many. They actually have a very short lifespan, though.
Do they?
I'm sure it's like 3 years or something like that. 3-4 years
together. That is a monster. So,
yeah, that's what it is. I think all them micro species and subspecies, they don't live too long today. So when you get, especially predators, perch don't live that long.
No.
8-10 years maybe. Yeah. Maybe less, I'm not too sure.
And they're delicate, to be fair, aren't they?
Very delicate. Angling pressure, no good for them.
No.
No good for them. Pike, I was speaking to Dave Horton, absolute mega pike angler. Yeah. And I said, oh, Dave, how old's like an old pike? He said 15 years would be an old pike.
Really?
I was like, wow, Jesus. Do you know what I mean? Like, crazy.
But again, like perceived as like really hardy fish, but in reality, with oxygen crashes and things like that, they're the first to go, aren't they?
Yeah, they are the first to go. And angling pressure really doesn't help. But people get on the perch. Like, it's very sort of, don't get me wrong, I didn't grow up perch fishing, no. But reading tells books and that, you see photos of them and stuff, and older generation of anglers done all going fishing, like some good old pals that I spoke to. You got like Nick Hellier and people like that, haven't you? That fished that heyday in Teddington and stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
So that was like mecca of perch fishing, wasn't it? When it was at its all-time high of catching them mega big Thames perch, and looking back at that time and speaking to people like him a good few years ago, it sort of gave me the buzz to get out and do it. And I did. So sort of been about 8 years I've been perch fishing now, religiously. Like, and yeah, I ended up obviously catching some huge perch in the last few years. Venue dependent, obviously.
Yeah.
Full of crayfish and stuff like that. That has boomed the population and the size of the perch in this country, as all like predator anglers will tell you. The invasive species and the crayfish have obviously made them grow massive in the river systems and stuff, and certain lakes and reservoirs. And yeah, I was catching some mega perch, and there was a big lake that my mate was fishing. Well, his granddad actually fished there years ago in the 60s, and he would eat the perch.
Mm.
And no history on the place. And he actually went there one evening, and we caught a couple of fours from another stretch of river, but this was a huge lake, mate. And he went up there one evening, and he sent me a photo. He's like, the perch is still here. I've just had one on a jig. And I was like, no way, like on a jig. And the water was really low, down to like the first shelf. So you had about 30 foot of water instead of about 60, do you know what I mean? And you could fish snag free because you didn't have a shelf to bring the lure over. So yeah, it was actually mad. The reservoir was drained, but there was still loads of water in it, mate. The reservoir is like 500 acres, do you know what I mean? So yeah, it was still a giant. It only had about 4 foot on the first ledge. It's about 4 foot deep for about 20 yards, and then it drops off. So there's only that much water out. And yeah, he had that. Then we started doing the winter on there, and we was catching on live baits. I was using lives and lures, enjoying my lure fishing, because I was all live bait under the, like I'd done that Drennan video, didn't I, on that old...
under the bridge.
Under the bridge, yeah, on the stream, and caught one just under four. Actually, when I said to Jack, listen to this, after we filmed that and put it back, I was like, look at the scales, mate. It was like 2 ounces out.
No, it was,
yeah,
a
it was
four.
Like 4-1, yeah. Obviously, I'm not claiming it now, but it was a 4-1, not a 3-15 and all.
Irrelevant, though, and it's
irrelevant,
just a mega,
yeah, mega perch, catch that on camera. Had another small one that day, insane. So we done the winter on there, because a lot of my live baiting under the bridge and stuff, that's what I was perch fish. That's how I fished for my perch. So I was enjoying my lure fishing, getting right into it, you know, fishing these lakes crystal clear in the winter, and catching 3-pounders, and I had a 4-pounder on a lure, 4-pound 1, and we didn't have a 4 out of this massive lake. We didn't have a 4 out of there. 3.15 I had, he had a 3.14, but I was catching 3s, a couple of 2.5s, catching regular every session, but like 1 or 2 fish.
Mm.
Never like we'd see a fish follow the other one in or anything like that. So yeah, we got to the point, it was weird. I was fishing like 2 ledged live baits, right? And about 25 foot of water. You wouldn't get a bite. but you drag that lead along the bottom slowly and feel like the live bait kicking, right, on the braid. And then all of a sudden it just go whack. And then you just open a bail arm and just feed it off where the perch has hit it. Mm. I think it's just so cold in that deep water in the winter. Yeah. The live bait's just sitting there not doing nothing.
No.
And as you're dragging that lead back, it's starting to like wake up. So anyway, me and my pal, my good mate Dan, he's more like family than a friend. He's one of the first people I met on one of the park lakes years ago. We're still mates to this day. We was fishing there. He took one of his old schoolmates, Nick, up there, who lives in Cambridge. So they went to the reservoir. And, yeah, it's still a drive, do you know what I mean? Still like it's in Essex, mate, do you know what I mean? Mm. It's not London.
No.
And, yeah, he's gone there and... I was at work and the conditions were mega, mate. And Nick's actually gone pike fishing because I put a big live bait on a pike rod. It's all new to us, this place. Yeah, we didn't know what was in there.
Yeah.
And I had a big roach on and it got taken, mate. And it was going and going and going. And I've let it go for a while, feeling the braid, and it's stopped and I could feel it. And I thought, right, he's turning it. I've got a big pike on, wound down, struck, nothing, mate. Just come back with like my trace and everything. Just
no teeth marks, nothing?
No, the bait was off.
Oh, right.
But like there weren't even no connection, not even like any resistance at all. It was just like, that don't make sense.
No.
So anyway, Nick's gone out and out piking with all these big lures and that. And he's faffing about. Dan said he was standing there chucking the rod. Nick had a free... something buzzing, biggest perch he'd ever caught. Dan had a free, and then he was standing there chucking the lure, Dan, and he was like, oh, go on, you have a few casts, Nick, I'm gonna make a roly. See, anyway, first cast, whack, he's caught this perch, and he's sent me the message, and he's literally sent me this message whilst I'm at work, and he's gone big, and I've gone, like, how big was that?
Yeah.
And he's gone, big. I said, well, how big was it then? And he's gone, 5'3".
Whoa.
And I've gone, wow. No way. Do you know what I mean? Two venues, right? That we was perch fishing that winter. I said, if we're going to get a 5, mate, or a fish of that calibre, it's going to be out of one of these two. So I was half gutted. But I was happy for Nick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? At the same time, because I couldn't have been there. I was working and Nick was buzzing. Do you know what I mean?
He's never
caught a big perch. He's caught a 3.8, I think it was, or a 3.10, then a 5.3. So anyway, 2 weeks later, three weeks later, we've gone back just after the new year. I was with my dad, took my dad out. Me, my dad, Dan and my dad went up there. We had a lovely day. Pardon, it was flat, calm, lovely. Caught a few perch. Dan had a couple of two and a three. I think I had a three. And then moved round to like round this other bank and casting out. Just moving along because it went a bit stale like in this area. So it was moving along. And all of a sudden, done the same thing. Because we'd done quite a few sessions on there, I then learnt that this old twitchy live bait thing was the way forward. Yeah. So I'd take loads with me. So I knew obviously I'd have enough bait and catch enough bait. And it wasn't coincidence. That was the way to catch them. Do you know what I mean? On the retrieve. So anyway, cast out, leave it a few minutes, twitchy, twitchy. So then I've left it about 10 minutes and started to bring it back slowly. And all of a sudden, I've had a proper hit, right? And it's going really slow. I'm thinking, this is a bit different. Like, usually they're just like bolt off. Strange, like, really slow. So I've give it sort of about 10 seconds and it's stopped. Give it a few more seconds. Some people might say that's too long, but... Mm. I've been angling enough to know, like, fishing there enough to know that that was around the time to sort of hit into them. Do you know what I mean? And if they was hooked a bit deep, forceps and everything, you got to be prepared and know how you're dealing with fish like that properly to not harm them. So anyway, hit into it and it's really heavy, mate. Like almost like the rod just arced over and was just like plodding. It was strange, as if like you'd hooked a carp. Do you know what I mean? And come like played it all the way in, a few head shakes, and just like a dead weight. And then in the margins, a few big head shakes, I could see it coming out of this depth, and it was side on, and it was really deep. It was like a football. And I was like, what is that? No way. Like, got the net, Dan netted it, and straight away, I've gone to lift it out, and it's just a different weight, mate.
Yeah.
Like, in the net, do you know what I mean? You could just lift them out one hand. That was almost like, I had to get it. I couldn't lift the net out like that. I like with my arm, I had to grab the spreader block and pull it out that way out with the pan net. Put her on the mat. Anyway, got the forceps out, got the hook out with the forceps, and put her back in the net to rest. Let her rest. Sorted out where we was going to do a little bit of filming and the photos, and got her out on the mat to do the photos. And he's gone, oh, that's the same fish Nick had.
Yeah, is he going to say it's the same one?
Yeah. Because it had a nick out of his tail. And I was like, no way. Like, I'd never seen a... You catch a 2-pound perch, giant. You catch a 3-pound perch, enormous.
Five's
unthinkable. Catch a 4, megalodon. You catch a 5, mate.
Nile perch.
Nile perch, yeah. Just like blow your socks off. Yeah. You know what I mean? Insane. Seeing one that size in your lifetime, you might never see one that size.
I ain't, no.
To catch one... Do you know what I mean? Or see one in the flesh is just unbelievable, mate. Unthinkable. And I did have a little target to try and catch a giant perch that winter because I had my PB was 4.6 for quite a few years, which is a giant anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, done a lovely little bit of a video and, yeah, let her go, swam off fine. But there's a sad part to the story that last week we actually found that fish dead. But obviously that's a really old perch.
Yeah.
And it's do you know what I mean?
It happens, fishing is life.
Yeah, we found a couple of dead ones that were like 2.5 pound. Really young, clean fish, and then that one.
Well,
I don't know whether it's I wouldn't know, but it's obviously old.
Yeah, it is what it is, isn't it?
It's life, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
No, my mate was blaming the cormorants, but I said, to be fair, if the cormorants were hammering them, mate, the cormorants have been over here, what, 20 years? And there wouldn't be any perch to catch anyway if it was down to the cormorants. Exactly. It's just nature taking its course, isn't it?
They certainly wouldn't be 5 pounds because there'd be no other silvers for them to eat.
But we only really fish one corner of the lake. Do you know what I mean? There's crays in there. So we have the whole lake to explore. We're still fishing there. And he actually had like a 4.8 and a 4.10 or something. Dan,
get me on the guesty Alf.
Yeah,
mate.
after that 5, do you know what I mean? So
that's ridiculous.
That was a different group of fish. We didn't have a 4.
If you've only fished one corner of the lake, who knows what could be in there?
Who knows? Who knows?
Just like his carp, and he loves a bit of mystery.
So, no, yeah, that was mega perch fishing, mate. Like huge.
I love it.
Huge pit perching, like, yeah, wicked. Battered myself that winter. On a big 500-acre pit.
Worth it.
Yeah, it was worth it in the end.
It was. Alf, this has been brilliant, mate. I've really thoroughly enjoyed it, mate. A little glimpse into your mindset and a little urban tour. Before I can let you go, you have to answer the Nash quickfire questions, mate. Quick is the operative word. You'll be fine with this. You ready?
Yeah, I've been holding in a pee for about 2 hours.
Oi, you can get away. I'll make these real slow then. Let's go for slow fire. We don't want a live weeing incident on the podcast. UK 50 or foreign 70?
UK 50.
Baiting pole or bait boat?
That's a hard one. I'll be honest, I've always used a bait boat.
Bait boat.
It's probably easier, to be fair. Less hassle.
Give you that. Would you rather experience carp fishing 20 years ago or 20 years in the future?
20 years ago.
Dawn or dusk?
Depends what species. Dusk for perch, dawn for carp.
Nice multi-species answer. Never use a shelter again or never use a bed chair again?
Never use a shelter again.
Would you rather be a professional angler or a professional footballer?
Probably a professional angler if they got paid the same amount as professional footballers.
Ah, good answer. Always torrentially raining when you're fishing or always 30 degrees and hot?
Cool. Don't know, mate. That's a hard one. Probably always 30 degrees.
Would you rather catch 10 20s in a session or one 40-pounder?
Well, it's always hard, isn't it? Depends where you're fishing. It could be...
All proper ones. Would you rather catch 140 or 10 20 proper ones?
10 20 proper ones. Oy.
For the rest of your life, you can only listen to drum and bass or country and western?
I don't really listen to much music, you know.
Do you not?
Drum and bass, I would say, though.
Would you?
Yeah.
It's the corruption of Alan Blair over the years, mate, isn't it? In a bucket or dig a hole?
In a bucket.
Would you rather fish a 2-week session without changing your socks or a 2-week session without changing your underwear?
A 2-week session without changing my socks.
Nice. Hook bait, colour choice, bright or match the hatch?
Bright.
Camo or olive?
I like camo, to be fair.
Last question. Date night with the missus or hit the lake / river / canal on the end of a big pressure drop and a fresh southwesterly?
Defo hit the lake or the river or the canal.
Come on, the boy. Alfie, you've been brilliant, mate. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for watching and listening. Please leave your comments and a review and please subscribe. I'll see you again with another Nash Off The Hook podcast. And I'm sure you enjoyed a little tour into the mindset of Alfie. Cheers, mate.
Thank you. You're welcome.